Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
Oh, good evening, boys and girls, moms and dads. We're back, the Mitch Hanks Show, live on MadisonTalks.com, our website. Also, Facebook Live. Madison Talks has all kinds of great podcasts. Just check it out. Go to the website. You'll see all kinds of people who have podcasts on there. And our show, which is live, right now we're live all over the world. It's what happens with the World Wide Web. We might have one person in New Zealand. It'd be good. But here we are. We don't have much of an audience in New Zealand. Anyway, we start tonight with the man of the hour, Madison Police Chief Mike Covo. Hello, Chief.
I'd like to be calling in from New Zealand. I've never been there.
Well, you can enjoy the sheep. You know, the late Al McGuire always wanted to retire in New Zealand. I don't think he ever did
it. Well, you know, you do now know that we are both of the geritol set, and anybody that's trending young will not know what the
hell
you just talked about.
Well, that's true. The late, great Marquette legendary coach.
Oh, God. An icon.
Yes.
An icon.
Yes, he was. And, of course, your son goes to Notre Dame, so there's a rivalry there for years.
Of course. And this week we're going to pee on the DePaul Blue Demons opening of their new stadium by handing them a loss this Saturday at 4 o'clock.
This Saturday? They play already against DePaul?
Yes,
wow.
Yes. New, down in Chicago.
New downtown arena for the Blue Demons. Anyway, here we are. The mass shooting, Chief, and the whole talk about gun control and gun laws all over the news, 24/7 cable. And as it turns out, this person shouldn't have been able to buy a gun over the counter because he had been discharged from the military for beating his wife and infant stepson, and had they simply shared that information with the FBI or the database, he wouldn't have been able to buy a gun over the counter.
Yeah, it's really disturbing. And I think, frankly, what we are now seeing is that that was not an isolated incident. And there's been a pervasive underreporting across the spectrum from our armed forces, which is very concerning.
So that is just negligence on the part of a large organization, in this case, the military.
Well, it would appear that I don't know why they would not have known that federal law mandates them, that there is no immunity, qualified or otherwise, just because you're serving our country in that capacity. So those federal laws have been on the book for some time, so this isn't like there's a novelty with the reporting requirements.
Well, it's kind of like, whoops, I guess I screwed that up. It's like not seeing the Titanic on those flares, you know, from 10 miles away.
It is concerning, that's for sure. I'm certainly, we're going to see some very embarrassed looks of exasperation in these Senate hearings that you know will convene as a result of that revelation.
Well, there's no question, and it would bring me to the topic of all these laws we have on the books, and apparently that are not enforced in many cases, and I've heard that regarding people who buy guns with criminal records, and they just kind of, I'll forget about it, but just chance it, or however that, and they slip through the cracks. I mean, I read about that. I mean, when Peg Lautenschlager was U.S. attorney, we would ask her about it from the media, and she'd say, well, it's what happens, you know, question of priorities and law enforcement and so forth. So what about that, Chief? What about laws that are on the books now that could make a real difference but aren't enforced?
Well, that's just the thing. When you see how these things have, what did I read the other day? Are we up to like two guns for every man, woman, and child in our culture now in the United States?
Yeah, that's about right.
The number is unabating and getting more so. And the fact of the matter is that you're right, that between, I think there's a lot of little wiggle rooms here. For me, I was sort of befuddled with why we can't have universal background checks. I mean, I think...
Okay, so that's what we don't have. That. What about laws we do have that should be enforced? We'll start with that, and then we'll...
Well, I think, first of all, obviously domestic violence have been one of those sort of common denominators that we're seeing in the more stark serial killers, like the mass shooters that we've seen now. Domestic violence is not an anomaly. And so if that is, in fact, through a recurring theme, why in the world we wouldn't place a priority or an emphasis on getting those into a database with a sense of urgency is mystifies me.
So there's a case where we already have laws that say you can't get a gun with
Correct.
Domestic violence, but yet we are sloppy in enforcing or doing the database
bookwork.
Updates. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, that's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned universal background checks.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard on conservative talk radio, oh, they're already background. Well, they're background checks for gun dealers, for licensed gun dealers.
Right.
Now, when you say that, are we talking about deals that go down in the parking lot or in the hallway of a gun
No.
show?
Yeah, there are so many exemptions. You're absolutely right. Those universal background checks can happen quite quickly with a phone call and a computerized entry, frankly. Those are fairly automated and fairly easy to get. But as between private practitioners, the gun show exclusions, and then we also
But I'm sorry, Chief. There is no gun show exclusion for the licensed dealer
Correct.
At the gun show.
Correct. We're talking about the private parties.
Right.
That
a
go
private
there.
Sale that happens in the parking lot or
Exactly.
in the hallway, right? Okay.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm glad you put that point of clarification on it, Mitch. That's an important distinction to make. The other thing we've seen is, of course, we have what we call the straw man, but this is Madison, so the straw person purchaser, where I'm unqualified or ineligible to have a handgun, so I have my girlfriend or my best friend or my mom in some instances act as the purchaser. They obviously clear waivers in the background, and then they ceremoniously turn it over to me and I pay them back or pay them a little back with a premium. We also have instances in some of the more urban settings like Milwaukee where they have the human holster commodity where they're best friends or members of their gang or the people they run with who are eligible or a youth who will have less sanctions if caught, they'll have that person literally have the gun in close proximity to the person who ultimately uses it. They can use the gun and then turn it right back over to what we call the human holster. So between straw purchasers and between human holsters that we see from time to time in the urban markets, there are so many different ways to get around it.
So you take the safest straw purchaser.
Yeah.
Whether it's a law-abiding person you find out or want to pay, and then, or the younger person without much of a record doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Although the younger person has to be 21, obviously, right?
Right.
Okay. So, but
human holster, if it's a 16-year-old that hangs with you, you see what I'm saying? Those implications are that kid is going to be caught in a juvenile youth authority versus.
Well, how does the human holster get the gun? From
However they've gotten the gun, they just
Then they have the kid.
Yes.
Well, he carries the gun after it's been bought.
Yes.
Right. Okay, I see. Well, how do we stop all that, Chief?
Well, I'll tell you, it feels like that the crevices in the proverbial dam are leaking and cracking on so many different flashpoints. I mean, I'm sort of old school, and I know that I probably don't have the empirically backed data to say definitively, but when you think about the ordeal of what that family went through at the Metro Market a little over a year ago in the winter, where their daughter was killed by a coworker who had been basically stalking her. On the east side of Madison.
Right.
When you look at the footage and realize that this person was able to get a gun through conventional legal means
right.
faster than when I got my pizza waiting in line to carry out on Friday.
Right.
That was sort of a stark sort of thing.
I got to tell you, I don't know if you have a daughter, Chief. I have a daughter, and you know, I'm not a big Charles Bronson guy with a gun at night on the subway, but I'll tell you this. If it's my daughter and somebody's stalking her to the car from work, I would like her to have a 44 Magnum, you know, or a cannon.
Oh, and again, you know, there's no small coincidence that if you look through what what Wisconsin has done in terms of the licenses generated under the concealed carry permitting process, I mean, it's through the roof. So you're not alone in that ideology.
Well, because
a lot of people feel that
way. I had people on after that happened, and of course they were from the progressive side, and so you can't blame the victim. And so I'm not blaming the victim, but how do you get from the building to the car?
Without incident.
And they say, well, that's not the point. The point is he shouldn't have. Okay, I understand the argument he shouldn't have had the gun.
Sure.
But guess what? He had a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like going into the theater in Colorado and there's six military people in the theater, but they didn't have firearms on it. I mean, the Texas dude across the street had a rifle, right? The guy could have killed more people. All I'm saying is, if it's my daughter walking to the car and there's a stalker with a gun, I want her to have a gun. Is that terrible to say?
No,
I don't think so.
Because we all draw the line at protecting me and mine. And I get that. And that's how people feel these days. They feel, as I can see, it's warranted. The police can't possibly be there to protect us against all evils. And there are so many prohibitions. What is sacred, Mitch? I mean, we see houses of worship, whether they're a Sikh house of worship, a temple, a church, a mosque, a mall, a school. Where haven't we seen this rear its ugly head? So given that that's sort of the pervasiveness of, and I think right now if you count mass shootings as, I think the FBI index is at 3 or more in a single incident, we're averaging one of those every 15 to 16 days in the United States.
Well, it's insane. Don't get me wrong, Chief. I'd rather have that person not have the gun. I mean, that's my first choice.
Absolutely.
I've said on the air many years, you know, if I knew that we could get every gun, I'd be for it. But we can't do that. I mean,
no, and the fact of the matter is as I always say to some people that think I'm not strident enough about anti-guns, is that the problem is the genie is out of the bottle. The guns are there. They're there in mass. So, yes, I would be the first on my block to say, and as a person who hopefully has some impetus on forming policy, we should emphasize the preventive means to keep people who are unqualified from not getting these guns. We should be continuing to look at what are the signs that we can look for early intervention. We can continue to look, and in fact, as some people have said, if we get down to the dearth of the mental illness issues and episodic breaks, yes, we need to enhance and expand our treatment options in mental illness. But all that...
How about red flags?
Of that is preemptive, but that doesn't solve the problem of the violence breaking out right from underneath their feet.
No, it doesn't. But I remember the case where a couple of a television reporter and a producer were shot in the morning show out in Carolina a few years ago.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
And this guy had been previously belligerent at that station as a former employee who had to be taken out by police. So in other words, that sounds like a red flag. It's not common that somebody is taken out of a place of employment because they're belligerent to the point where police have to come.
Exactly.
Now, to me,
you're right. That's a time where there was the opportunity to look at that as an intervention option.
Right. But we don't ever do that, is my point.
No, we don't.
So we have all these red flags, and I'm sorry, I don't want to live in a police state, but you know what? If somebody's a hothead where they're going to be doing that, I want that known by police or by the gun register. I don't know how you'd go about that in terms of him buying a gun.
Yeah, and you know, we're talking about the things that would obviously be flags for us, and obviously the military clearly did not live up to the expectations of reporting these things in a timely fashion, and it sounds like it's a lot wider scale than any of us would hope to have imagined. But between that and the other thing that concerns me is there's no sense of uniformity on what constitutes sort of that which is the equivalent of a civil commitment, and people who are having mental illness breaks and their access. There's a lot of leaky holes there in terms of who can access guns, too, without being disqualified.
As I understand it, professionally licensed psychologists, psychiatrists, therapists, if the client is expressing an intent to commit violence...
Then they have a duty to report.
Yeah, they do, currently, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
now,
I don't know what happened in the case of the Virginia Tech shooter. I know he had a mental illness history, but I'm not sure what that entailed.
Yeah, I don't know to what extent that was ever formalized as an involuntary civil commitment, though. I don't recall the circumstances in that instance.
Okay, so at least we start with universal background checks. In other words, of course, see, that reminds me of the person who sells a car to somebody who's got 8 OWIs, and that's happened, Chief.
Oh, sure.
Because you're selling somebody a car in cash on your front lawn or in the back. And you say, well, is the seller supposed to be involved in law enforcement? I say, well, yes. I mean, make them go down to the DMV and have the buyer authorized? Is that too much to ask?
Well, that's just the thing. You know that you've been gracious about listening to me talk about this, but invariably when we have a tragedy in Madison on the homicide scale, the reporters, your brothers and sisters, colleagues, as it were, are very quick to pounce upon, what number are we at? And I always say, well, it depends on how you count, because they all want to know the people that are dead by virtue of an edged weapon or a firearm or something, you know, like that. But I say, well, doesn't anybody want to count the five people that I've lost this year who, through no fault of their own, were killed by a 2-ton bullet? It's called a car drive recklessly.
Well, and by multiple offenders, right?
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
But somehow people don't think it's a responsibility of a seller to do law enforcement or, in a sense, go down with the buyer to, because the DMV would immediately show that this person can't buy a car because he has 7 or 8 OWIs. And aren't we to the point, Chief, where, yes, you know, when it comes to a gun or a car, yes, the answer is yes.
Well, and you know, these days your discussion about the car is always interesting, because when we did Shake the Lake, people were highly perplexed and vexed at it got a lot of feedback, because I always go to all these big events, and they say, why do you have these huge concrete barriers entering into the aesthetics and the optics of that? And I see a couple of your officers posted at the entries, both at Broome Street as well as Blair Street. And my gosh, I see they have slung rifles in clear, plain view. And I'm like, such is the new normal of our world. Have you not seen any of the footage from Europe or even in our own United States, in New York City? That's the sort of considerations that when people say, how's Freak Fest going to go? I can give you my conventional answer, Freak Fest, but then I also have a contingency Freak Fest where I'm also planning for that kind of disturbing element based on what we see taking place.
Well, and I think most people who go to Freak Fest want security. They want police.
I hope so.
It's like when you hear a member of Congress from an inner city where there's a lot of crime, they're the ones that want more police. I mean, I've heard that time and time again.
Well, you know, it's getting to the point, you know, people are, some are very mortally offended by the extent to which the government is dipping into zones of privacy on people. And yet I say, you know, you don't realize it, but it's been pervasive over a number of years. You want to go to that rock concert? You want to go to that football or basketball game at the Kohl Center or Camp Randall? You're submitting yourself to a full outright search, you know, because just because you have a ticket doesn't guarantee your privacy.
Well,
you want to get on that plane? Assume the position. TSA can, with no cause or any cause, decide who's going to be searched for a secondary or tertiary search. There's a lot of ways. You know, lately in Madison, of course, everybody's up in arms as well. We're concerned about the police use of surveillance. I'm like, these cameras are in public places and public spaces to view public activities. We don't have them centered on people's bedrooms and violating their Fourth Amendment rights. We're looking at, as do many major cities, where we see people coming and going, and particularly at some of these major arterial streets. If they've just robbed someone at the 7-Eleven, I'd kind of like to see what the color of the car was in their plate. So there's so many things that people find very incompatible with rights of privacy, and yet I would suggest that the government has inserted itself from a standpoint of public safety into a lot of these
games. Oh, sure. Well, I went to the game last week in Wisconsin, Indiana, in Bloomington, and my aunt, her purse, she had to go back to the car. It was a long way away because they only allow purses to be clear, plastic clear purses, or you can't go in. And of course,
now you know what to get her for Christmas. Now they have those specially approved stadium see-through handbags for people who
That's what they had. She could have used one. But then she had things in her purse she didn't want anybody to see. That's a problem.
Yes,
I mean, let's face it. So, anyway, here's the point. You need a little flask in there or God knows what. I don't know what else would be in there. But I mean, there's a certain amount of privacy that people aren't willing to exchange. But in summary, though, Chief.
By the way, if you have to, if you've been a faithful follower of Indiana football, you're going to need a flask to get through your pain. My
well,
God.
Don't assume there weren't arrangements made. Now, here's the deal. So when you say universal check, how do we get the person in the hallway or the parking lot to? To be registered or to check the gun that goes from his or her hands into the hands of the buyer?
Yeah, you literally would have to probably establish a secondary market for doing just that as a single one-time transaction, having them basically broker the deal.
Yeah, but, I mean, they have to register.
Right.
I mean, they're at the site.
You have to register the firearm and who the purchaser is, who's the seller, and has the who the buyer is, and how have they been identified, and all.
Well, because the way to enforce it then would be to trace the gun. Of course, there'd be no way to trace that transaction if they don't play ball, right? I mean,
exactly. And the fact of the matter is that there's going to be how many of those informal transactions that will never.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, we can talk big about universal background. What does it mean?
It's at best a good faith attempt to get the more blatant transactions to go underground and make it a little more difficult. But your point is well taken. If someone is so motivated, I guarantee they can get a gun. I guarantee they can get a gun in Madison.
Well, unless you have somebody that knows the buyer,
right,
who then sees it on the news in 6 weeks. But, I mean, the chances of that are pretty slim, aren't they, Chief?
Certainly. They are.
So, really, it's words at this point on universal background checks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like this conversation with 19-year-old ID. We'll talk about it later. When I was 19, I had a fake ID. I mean, I had that for years.
Did you buy yours from the back of Rolling Stone magazine where you had all those things you could send away for?
No, it was a guy in the dorm named Ron. You know, I looked a little bit like Ron, and I used it, I used it for years. I felt like those years went on forever. But if you wanted to do anything socially,
yeah,
go to a bar, go to a restaurant with a bar, go to a dance club, you had to have a fake ID. Now,
The
alternative at 19 would have been to stay at home in the dorm room and have Hawaiian punch. And I got to tell you something, Chief, that wasn't really on the table. So all my friends had fake IDs.
I am certain that there are entrepreneurs out there because we seem to be confiscating really good fake IDs every weekend downtown here.
Well, I won't even tell you, who I know that over the years had fake IDs. But all I'm saying is that I had one. All my friends had them. And, the tradition has gone on. So I'm thinking just make it legal at 19 so we don't have to have all that monkey business.
Yeah, well, and again, it's interesting. I'm being very careful because I know you have a lot
of... I know you can't. I know what you can do.
I personally could obviously imbibe at age 18 because I'm as old as Methuselah.
Oh.
And that's when the law was... I hope the city attorney isn't listening. For me, myself, and I, not speaking as the chief of police
right.
of Madison County, I personally have a certain conflict in the sense that, let's see, now they can be held liable for any contracts they entered into, including marriage, God forbid. They can serve our country in the armed forces.
Right.
The whole nine yards, but gosh darn it, they can't have
a beer.
Light.
Well, and also you are encouraging illegality and fake IDs. And I know the person who's... And the person who's home with a glass of milk and, cutting the plants, I don't believe that's right. I mean, of course, I'm not going to try to say it's noble or right. I'm just saying
there's
a certain amount of street reality.
And that's true. And I think that's the thing that the essence of this conversation has said, is that you can take all the preemption and create all the rhetoric and legislation you want, but where there's a will, there's a way, and they will find a way to get a gun if they're so inclined.
Okay, so we've discussed that, yes, universal background checks sound good. How they would be enforced is another question, right, Chief?
Well, yes, exactly. It would be difficult. And again, what you're trying to do is make the degree of difficulty a little bit more cumbersome. So when we have those private practitioners who boldly go to, say, a show, or they're selling it on a Craigslist or something, at least they're going to be a little bit more apprehensive about looking over their shoulder before submitting the deal.
You can trace Craigslist a little easier, but because you got a trail of print.
Sure.
But if somebody buys one in the parking lot, the gun show, or in the hallway, or in the gym, or you're not going to be able to enforce that law unless somebody knows the buyer and squeals when the crime is committed. And the chances of that are like me breaking 70 now after the stroke. I mean, it's just, I don't want to sound pessimistic, but is that not fair to say, Chief? I mean, come on.
Yeah, you're absolutely. Your pragmatism is really depressing me today, Mitch.
Well, I'm sorry.
I find some resolution, and I could go on with my life with a little bit of giddy up in my step.
At least we did say that we should enforce the laws we have in the books against domestic violence offenders. That should be done.
That should have been done in this instance, and it should have been done for decades. We've had it on the books for a while now.
What about the one about people that have criminal records that buy guns and slip through the cracks because law enforcement doesn't have a lot of priority to go after all of them?
Well, that's just the thing, is that it's going to have to probably be flagged at the point of sale, because I don't think in a lot of these instances they're county sheriff's departments that are doing some of those secondary checks. They don't have the resources to flag all those down.
Well, so again, you have a law where if you're a felon, you can't buy a gun. But somebody did a bar fight at 18, and now they're 43, and they go buy a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nobody knows, because we don't have a system that says, oh, no, this person's a felon.
Well, and the other thing that's been sort of convoluted is that some states are better than others as identifying specifically whether that crime that they were convicted has a predicate in domestic violence. We've often seen instances where someone who was charged with a battery, I mean, if you look in our state statutes, you're not going to see domestic battery. You're not going to see domestic disorderly conduct. You're going to see disorderly conduct, or you're going to see battery. And, oh, by the way, it's only after you realize the relationships of the parties that you then sort of put that enhancer label around it, and hopefully that's what's captured when they do the entering into the database. But I've seen instances where things that were rooted in domestic violence were only covered as straight crimes, and in that sense, they're also being dropped. Not being covered
properly. So domestic violence, those words aren't in there in the...
In some states, it's not universally. You know, it's sort of cover language.
Okay, so we have no uniformity there.
There isn't.
But a felon's a felony is a felony, right, Chief?
A convicted felon should be a convicted felon, and that's why I'm saying that should show up as they're doing those data checks, and that should have been right at the point of a sale.
Okay, but why wouldn't it show up? I mean, would somebody just not put it in the database?
It would have to seriously have just been because someone failed to enter it into the database for, well, some call it the III, Interstate Identification Index.
Uh-huh.
I'm old enough to call it the old rap sheet, the Record of Arrest and Prosecutions, and these days it would be in CCAP. So, you know, it's all over the place.
What percentage of felons, probably nationwide, are not put into the database, and so they...
I have no idea.
Okay, you think it'd be significant because of just...
Again, it just depends on how circumspect those who take those criminal convictions once they're made in circuit court and then get it into a database. That's the only link that would be missing here.
Chief, final minute. I mean, to wrap it up with one bit of summation on this, what would you say?
I don't think that in spite of our best efforts, as you have in as much made reference to, is that all of the laws in the world may impede, deflect, or delay someone from getting access to a gun who shouldn't have access to a gun. But at the end, our best causes lie more with the prevention, preemption, and intervention things and getting treatment for people who are mentally ill than to constantly go back and forth about what sort of enabling legislation is going to absolve us from tragedies like this. I just don't think there's a one-size-fits-all pill that will cure this.
All right, and this guy beat up a dog and smashed his infant stepson, so I don't know. You know, good luck with therapy on that one, Chief.
Yeah.
I'll let you have that next client. And you can.
Oh, brother. Well, isn't that the truth?
Chief, thank you very much. And go Irish against Miami.
You know, it has that sort of vibe, which petrifies me, because right when I think we're getting relevant again, I don't want to have hit a speed bump and leave Miami with a loss. So thank you. I hope you're not patronizing me and you are sincerely hoping for the Irish to win.
I remember Catholics versus Convicts back in 88. So.
Well, it was a good marketing ploy. I don't know if it was very PC then or now.
Probably not, but great game. Thanks, Chief. Good luck.
Take care.
All right, take
you
care,
too.
Chief.
Bye-bye.
Mike Koval. Thank you so much. Boy, we kind of did. We figure that out. We kind of went around in circles and realized, you know, good luck with some of these laws. We don't have laws now. Universal background check. What does that mean? Are we going to have my cousin Vinny by the gun in the hallway and somebody squeal on him? We'll come back. Charles Franklin himself coming up after the break. Last night's Democratic victory, what does it mean for Trump, 2018? What does it mean? What does it mean? What does it mean? The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.
At Troy Research, we understand that success is determined by your customers. To realize the greatest success possible, you need to understand what they want and why. Your customers have opinions to share with you. As researchers, our assignment is to gather those opinions, illuminate the issues, and shed the light of understanding on decision-making. Where can good research take your business? Call or email to talk about it. Troy Research at 608-271-8884 or email jlittle@troyresearch.com.
When it comes to telephone on-hold advertising, some commonly asked questions are, why do we need an on-hold message? How do we write a script? How long should the message be? How does the message get played? How much does it cost? I'm Bob of Abella Creative Services, and a telephone on-hold message speaks directly to your target audience while they're on hold with your company. Continuously advertises only your business without the clutter of competitive ads and for just a fraction of conventional advertising costs. At Bob Abella Creative Services, we'll help you draft a well-written script, provide the appropriate announcer, music, or sound effects, and the studio time and expertise to put it all together. We'll also provide you with any special equipment you might need to play your on-hold message. Even though we probably have more experience than most other on-hold message companies, will cost you less. Let Bob Abella Creative Services stretch your advertising dollar with an on-hold message that provides your customers with real, actionable solutions to their problems. Bob Abella Creative Services gets results. Just send us an email at bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. That's bacsgetsresults@gmail.com.
The all-new Mitch Hanks Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
As life celebrations bring people together, you'll be comforted knowing we have community rooms available for those who wish to serve food and refreshments before, during, or after your gathering. This is Pete Gunderson. We're here to assist with every detail. Learn more at GundersonFH.com. Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, your hometown life celebration center.
Gunderson Funeral Home.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
We're back live on the Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live. Our guest is Professor Charles Franklin from the Marquette Law School, political science professor. And hello, Professor Franklin.
Hey, Mitch. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. You must have been watching last night's returns all night long, or I don't know what. You had the popcorn out?
I had the popcorn, I had the internet, and I was clicking on precinct returns. It was
Well, were you doing precinct returns from Westchester County in New York and Manchester, New Hampshire? I mean, what we're hearing is that a lot of places in the East or Northeast where Republicans always did better lost last night, along with Virginia, which is a blue state now. But Republicans were losing a lot of places.
Well, they were. Some, like New Jersey's governorship, were easily anticipated, and so not as much of a surprise. I think in Virginia, the size of the Democrats' win by 9 points was a good bit more than the 2 or 3 point average that he had as a lead in the last polls. So that was a surprisingly strong finish for him. But maybe more importantly was how big the swing in the Virginia House of Delegates was. There, Republicans had a 66 to 34 advantage in seats, and it looks like that legislature will end up being either tied or the Democrats winning the House by 1 or 2 seats.
Wow.
There are about 4 or 5
man.
Recounts pending there, so very close races. So it could go either way. But the main point is Democrats picked up somewhere between 14 and 17 seats to really turn around a seemingly invincible majority for Republicans into maybe at least a tie and perhaps a Democratic win. So that's the really important thing is it's one thing for one race to tilt our Democrat. It's that this went down to the House of Delegates as convincingly as it did.
And that is an amazing balance of power switch. But how much of that is the incumbent party lazy and lethargic in an off-year race?
Well, it could be. It could be that they thought only the governor's race was going to be interesting, and so they didn't invest as much. But when you see so many incumbents losing, I think if I got my numbers right, there were 3 open seats that Democrats picked up. But there are as many as 13 incumbent Republicans who were defeated. So that's hard to chalk up to just complacency. What we saw was that suburban districts that have in the past been at least leaning Republican swung further to the Dems this time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the southwest of the state, which is the rural southwest, remain strongly Republican,
right, right.
But not just the D.C. suburbs, but down around Norfolk and Virginia Beach, you saw, and Richmond, you saw pretty strong Democratic inroads.
Well, I see that as Democratic energy and Democratic turnout, and women giving the governor, the candidate, 5% more than Hillary received in terms of the margin of victory. I think Hillary's margin of victory was 17% of women against Trump, and this governor's candidate had 22% plurality.
That's right. And also a lot of the House of Delegates victors were women who defeated male.
Women are fired up. I mean,
there is.
They had a million woman march the day after Trump won, and now they get a chance to vote.
And that's showing that January enthusiasm is still there here in November. We'll see if it can carry over until November a year from now. But it's certainly energizing for Democrats as they look forward, and definitely a warning to Republicans that they have to take 2018 very seriously, even in places where their incumbents might normally think they can, can pull out a win.
How about this, though, Professor? I mean, we're still talking about blue states. We're talking about New Jersey or New York or Westchester or Long Island or even Massachusetts, where I think somebody said a mayor in Manchester, Massachusetts, I mean, which was more of a Republican place, didn't do well. But these are still blue states.
I think that's a worthwhile point to make. And if this weren't Republicans losing in suburban areas where they've been strong, I think I would discount it some. Now, it's certainly fair to say that does this mean that Indiana and Kansas, let alone Wisconsin, face an equally big wave? Well, maybe not. A lot of these are areas where Clinton did well or possibly even won, despite a Republican holding on in the state legislature. So I think there is something to be said for that.
Yeah.
And it's fair to say that a lot of Republican seats across the
All right.
country
Go
are
ahead.
Big
Sorry.
Republican
Yeah.
areas.
Okay, and you're from Alabama originally, and they've got a big seat race going up December 12th. And I think the Democrat, is it Doug Jones?
Doug Jones, yes.
He's even in some polls with Roy Moore.
And that's very interesting. You know, if you had to bet that a Democrat was going to win Alabama, you'd want real odds to make that bet, you know? But one thing that hadn't gotten as much attention is that Roy Moore had been on the Supreme Court, was forced off of it, and then ran and was reelected. But when he was reelected, he got just 52% of the vote in Alabama. That's running way behind other Republicans in that race. And so he may win, but I think it's important to realize that he's had trouble with the Alabama electorate already. The question is whether Jones can pick up on that and whether voters, in fact, will be swept up in some of this tide.
Well, and there's where energy and turnout can help the GOP because it's a red state. But, I mean, let's face it, you've got younger professionals, yuppies in Alabama, right? I mean, it's not the same Alabama as it was when you were a five-year-old.
It has certainly changed, and you do have big urban areas and highly educated areas like Huntsville, Alabama, where NASA has some installations. Alabama is such a Republican state, you wouldn't bet against Moore. But I guess if you wanted to say if Virginia was a surprise, if the Democrat wins that special election in Alabama for the Senate in December,
that'd be a big surprise. That would scare probably a lot of Republican incumbents. Hey, I'm Indiana. Yeah. I'm from Indiana, which is a huge red state, and a Democrat had not won there for president since 64, LBJ, and then Barack Obama won in 08, first time since LBJ.
A big surprise there.
And then in 2012, Romney won, so it only lasted 1 year, same as Carolina. But Alabama, even in 2008 and 12, held for the red GOP.
That's right. And, you know, on national level things, we certainly see that Republicans win, you know, the presidency and the governorship in Alabama handily. This is really an issue, I think, of whether Moore actually does have liabilities, even with solid Republicans in the state. And whether the Democrat Jones can really win some of them over, or whether he turns out to be too much of a progressive for those Republicans
right.
might otherwise go.
I got to say, Professor, this tells me turnout was low on the one end and high on the other end last night, because according to exit polls, the leading issues were health care and gun
right.
safety. Now, those
right.
are definitely progressive issues.
And we do see in the turnout profile that it looks like Democratic areas almost equaled their presidential turnout from last year, down just 10%. But a lot of the Republican areas were down in turnout as much as 40%.
Right.
So they still stayed Republican, but they didn't turn out nearly the number of votes that they
The energy, had. I mean, Democratic energy was very high.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard it was a 5% increase. I heard Donna Brazile say it was a 5% increase in Virginia. I guess, and I thought she meant compared to 16. You're saying that's not the case?
Well, that's not the number I saw, but I did not hear what she said. And I could be wrong as well on this. But I don't think the general point is really in question, and that is Democrats had a real advantage in enthusiasm.
My point is Hillary won Virginia by 5 points in 16.
Right.
And that against the Trump tide, where he won Indiana by 33 and he won West Virginia by 43. I don't know what he won in Alabama, but, you know.
But one thing about that is that Gillespie, the Republican in Virginia, ran behind Trump in a lot of places where Trump had already run behind Romney 4 years earlier. And so this does raise the question of whether the shift to Trump is strong in some areas, but is really hurting the party, maybe seriously, not just a turnout matter, in some of the more suburban areas.
Yeah. Well, we've reached the point where the Steve Bannons and the Laura Ingrams. By the way, Laura Ingram and Sarah Palin were here for Paul Ryan's primary opponent 2 years ago. And Ryan won 85-15. All I'm saying is that with gerrymandered districts now, Paul or Steve Bannon has the power to affect change at the primary level. But to say that if that happens, those primary winners are going to win in the fall makes me remember Richard McIntyre beating Richard Lugar in Indiana. And you had Christine O'Donnell in Delaware. You had Sharon Angle in Nevada. And who's the guy in Missouri?
Oh, yes. I know his name. I'll think.
Yeah, and he was the guy. But what I'm saying is when you go for those pure, unabashed, conservative, all-out conservative primary winners, that doesn't – I mean, that could mean general election defeat.
I think that –
Todd Akin.
Todd Akin, thank you. Yeah. Certainly was true in 2010 and to some extent in 12 and 14. I think this is the dilemma of the Republican Party, is Republican incumbents fear being primaried by an opponent supported by Bannon or someone to the far right. And they could do that as long as their district really was completely safe for the fall. Now, if there is a Democratic wave in 18, and I think we're still a ways away from being sure of that, it does mean that from the party's point of view, there's a bigger downside to having a lively primary than there would be under other circumstances. And again, some of those defeats in states that were winnable for ordinary Republicans but were lost by some of the more expressive Tea Party folks are a case in point.
Right. You know, they might have won the primary, but they went home, as what Mitch McConnell would like to say over over a Jack Daniels. Hey, listen, Professor Charles Franklin, we appreciate it very, very much.
Always great to be here, man.
Roll
you.
Tide, just a few more games, and ho-hum, another national title.
Well, maybe. We'll see.
Thank you very much. I'm glad basketball started. All right, Professor Franklin, thank you very much, and we'll talk again.
Bye-bye.
He is the ultimate political junkie, isn't he? Which, of course, I am, too. And if you're into politics, you did not stay for that last segment. 19-year-old drinking age. Should we say yes to that? Some thoughts on that, which will, I'm sure, pelt me with violent reaction, but I can't help it. I'm back in a momento on the Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.
Joe here from Comedy on State. Looking for something to do? Maybe you got a birthday coming up. You want to get the family together? Come to Comedy on State. It's so easy. You can go to madisoncomedy.com. You can purchase your tickets right from the website. We book the best comics from Late Night, from Conan O'Brien, from Comedy Central.
For a list of upcoming Comedy Club performers or to purchase tickets, go to madisoncomedyclub.com and click shows. Performer bios are available by clicking on their pictures.
That's Comedy on State. madisoncomedy.com or 256-0099.
In real estate, you want to work with Tim Rail.
One thing that we really appreciated about Tim was his knowledge of the real estate market. Fair prices, what was asking too much, and he knew about development, who the builders were, and what their strengths were.
Let's get ink on paper today with Realtor Tim Rail of Coldwell Banker Success, 698-7653.
Tim is a very fun guy, and it was a very enjoyable process.
Tim Rail, 698-7653.
Talk radio will never be the same. The uncommon sense of Mitch Hank has been unleashed worldwide. This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
At P3 Pro, we're invested in creating a dynamic video experience for our clients. Everything from planning, shooting, and editing your events, commercials, webcasts, or films. P3 Pro has 27 years of industry standard experience, working to make your vision a reality. We stand apart from your traditional run-of-the-mill production experience and create memorable, moving, breathtaking imagery that conveys your message in a powerful way. We take your vision and turn it into a work of art that art of storytelling, the art of beautifully crafted imagery, the art of persuasion. Visit us on the web at p3pro.xyz or call 608-571-3776. That's 608-571-3776.
6 AM Marketing is a Wisconsin-based ad agency that doesn't look or act like other ad agencies. They don't follow conventional thinking and constantly push themselves and their clients to test the bounds of how far they can go. The result is relationships that have lasted more than 10 years. Clients refer to 6 AM and their work as fresh, insightful, strategic, edgy, and creative. 6 AM shows customers why your products and services are better than the competition. 6 AM's brand smart process helps you establish your brand in the market for years to come. With a client's marketing team by its side, 6 AM digs for the business problem the client is trying to solve and the business goals and objectives they hope to achieve, examining the market, competitors, the brand's consumers, and messaging to define a brand proposition that is both compelling and unique to the market. 6 AM Marketing. They do it differently, and they do it well. Go to 6ammarketing.com. That's www.6ammarketing.com.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
Okay, there's a proposal out there to bring Wisconsin's drinking age to 19, and I got to tell you, I'm for that. Again, I'm 55 now, and I had a stroke. But I don't drink like I once did. I just can't do it. I mean, I'm old, and I can't. If I have more than two drinks, I'm feeling it now as an old man. But as a young person in college and so forth, I was like everybody else that I hung with. We drank a lot of beer and
put them back. Huh?
I drank mixed drinks, and I was, you know, and I could come back the next day and fight another day. You know, we used to rest on the weekends because we drank so much during the week. I'm not saying that was good. And it's terrible. I realize that. It really is. And I don't like it. My sister, who's militant, because she is now a non-drinker. I won't go into details on that whole history. But the point of it is, and she's trained her daughters to think it's gross and the smell of alcohol. And they now notice if somebody else has had too much and very sensitive to that effect. All I'm saying is it's natural in our social world to drink at 19. I'll cut to the chase. When I was 19, I had a fake ID. I was Ron Cale for many years. He looked enough like me with dark hair. And they would say, "What's your name?" And I'd say Ron Cale, K-O-E-H. You know, I memorized. It was terrible. But there were like 3 years of my life where you couldn't go into a restaurant with a date. You couldn't go into a bar, a dance club, or without a fake ID.
Right.
I mean, the places you, I mean, if you didn't have a fake ID, you had a limited scope of where you could be socially. And then we drank in the dorm when we're not supposed to because we're underage. I mean, the whole, it's just, you know the story, right? I'm not bragging about this. I'm just saying that's what happened. And not only did I have a fake ID, my friends had fake IDs. And I don't have to say that I had family members down the road who I found out after the fact had fake IDs. I'm not proud of it, but they were like I was. They wanted a social life. They were young, and they were running around. So young people know how to get fake IDs. It's funny. I used to go to my son used to bartend and was manager at a downtown popular bar, and I'd go visit, and I'd see Badger under class Badger basketball players in the line to get in. And I was always impressed that nobody would take a photo of them and put it on Facebook. There was a lot of loyalty. One time I was in the bar, there were three Badger basketball players in there. I'm not going to rat them out.
Right.
But the point of it is the kids didn't either, which I thought was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And my son said, One of them had a fake ID from Hawaii. I mean, it was a major Badger player, and he had a ID from Hawaii, which really says more about Badger kid loyalty to the athletes for not ratting them out. I mean,
yeah, that's pretty big.
We live in a world where you can rat somebody out so easily now.
Instantly,
you know, by texting or Facebook, but beside the point. So now you got these fake IDs. We have a law that's 21. So you are encouraging kids who want to have social lives to have fake IDs and to lie and to commit, what is it, fraud, right?
I mean, yep.
Now, if they are given a citation, it's on their record, right? And I would prefer that our young people didn't drink at all. Alcohol's dangerous. People die. My first choice would be for them to socialize and not drink at all. I'd love that. But I also know that we have people who do drink and have fake IDs because they want to go out. They want to be with their friends. They want to have a social life. And is it better for us to have a law at 21 where we have all these fake IDs? Or do we have a law at 19 where they can at least be legal?
I think taking away the stigma would help with the.
It also means they're on the hook, and they have to be, you know, they are who they say they are, and they got to watch it. If they get drunk and drive, they're in bad shape.
Yeah.
But if they are drunk and they walk home. And they can't get cited for, or they get cited for public intoxication, but not for underage drinking, right? Mm. And there have been several athletes over the years I know have been cited for underage drinking. So you take one less offense away. And you got to be pretty sloppy drunk to get cited for public intoxication.
Yeah.
You know what I'm,
yeah.
I mean, if you're, to me, it's easier if you're fair skinned and 17 to get stopped if you're out. Just because you get carded, the cops nail you for underage. You take that charge away. All I'm saying is you got somebody in the military. I know this is the fallback, as the chief pointed out. You got somebody in the military who is fighting ISIS in Afghanistan or Iraq or Syria, and they're 19 and they can't, and 20, and they can't get a beer when they come home on leave. He's got his uniform on. He comes in, and he wants a beer, and you can't have a beer legally. I'm sorry. Come on.
Yeah.
What is that? He just had his buddy shot in front of him a foot away. I mean, you know, to me, as long as they don't drive, why can't that Marine have a beer or even a whiskey, as far as I'm concerned? Young man, you deserve whatever you want. You've just been over there in combat for me. Am I going to say to that Marine, no, you can't have, I'm sorry, you have an, Sergeant, can I see your ID? Can I see your ID, Sergeant? I mean, who's, and we have a phone number to call in, 210-1667, 210-1667, toll free 844-34-MITCH. Who's going to say we shouldn't have the age at 19? Because people aren't going to drink until they're 21? Is that the argument? You want to wait until they're more mature? I got news for you. We didn't wait till we were 21. And I don't know of anybody who did. And I've heard this and argued this. Joe Winicky argued this with me because he said he was kind of a nerd when he was younger. I was too, but... Yeah. At least I'd go to parties in high school, and there was marijuana at every party I went to. I don't know about you, but where I grew up, I mean, Lafayette, Indiana, there was marijuana at every party.
I didn't do parties when I was a kid.
I did when I was going to Kegger's when I was seventh grade. I'm not proud of it, but I remember those parties, you know, because I, in your seventh grade or eighth grade, and you're trying to drink a beer, you're trying to impress your friends, you drink and go. You'd kind of do it in gulps or in very – they go, no, you got to swallow it right away. I had to learn how to swallow it right away. I'm not bragging. This is terrible. I'm not saying this is right. But my mother always told me, learn how to hold a job and hold a drink. When I was 17, I'd be at home. My mother would say, have a beer here. I don't want you out there drinking, getting drunk. Just have one here. When I was in college, I had these preacher's kids who'd never had a beer, just throwing up all around me. I knew how to, right, yeah. I knew how to drink. I mean, I was pretty economical anyway. But not anymore, folks. Just drink milk. I'm all for it. Milk's got its issues. I'm sorry, but we'll come back. Who trusts the media? You're talking about fake news, false news. Who trusts the media? And who should we trust? We'll come back with that in a moment on The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.